My guest on the show is one of this country's leading brand and marketing executives. Vicky Free is a proven expert in brand strategy, digital media, integrated marketing, branded content, consumer insights, and business analytics across various consumer-centered industries. With more than 20 years of B2B and B2C experience, Vicky has developed strategy, innovation, and results-driven campaigns for best-in-class global brands, including McDonald's, WarnerMedia, BET, a division of Viacom, the Walt Disney Company, and currently, Novant Health. Vicky has built a reputation as a general management leader with solid business acumen rooted in a culture of innovation, data-driven decision-making, and collaborative relationships to deliver enterprise-wide impact. A South Carolina native, Free holds an executive MBA from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University and a Bachelor of Arts in Mass Communication from the University of South Carolina. She's a member of the Dean of Communications and Information Advisory Board at the University of South Carolina, and she sponsors an annual scholarship for students in need. She is actively involved in many professional organizations and has earned leadership certifications from UCLA's Anderson Graduate School of Management and Harvard University's Executive Management Program. Vicky is a member of the board of directors of Promax BDA and served as the secretary of the executive board. As a champion for strategic diversity, inclusion, and equity, Vicky has played key roles in establishing and supporting the success of business resource groups across her career. She's a member of the Executive Leadership Council and has been recognized by various publications and organizations for executive leadership and marketing. Her expertise, including Ad Age, Ebony, Cablefax Most Powerful Women and Minorities in Cable Vision, NAMIC, Multicultural TV Leadership Awards, Promax BDA, Black Enterprise, The Network Journal, and Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. She's a highly sought after public speaker on topics ranging from personal branding, marketing strategy, career navigation, diversity, inclusion, and equity. Welcome, Vicky Free, to Future Focus Now. Thank you for joining us and being a part of the show. We are glad to have you. We're glad to have you in the house. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm looking for that woman you just described. Who is she? Where is she?
what I know, Vicky, that's a pretty amazing individual who has done a great, and we want to get into certainly a discussion tonight. We got you here. Marketing, branding is so much a part of the ethos in today's world, in today's business community. You stand and you work right in the middle of that. So, but first of all, that's how you do it. When people come on Future Focus Now, the first thing we got to ask is, how are you?
I am great. Let me start by saying I am honored to join you, Dr. Robinson, on Future Focus. And I'm excited to just brain meld with you about this moment in time that we have, where I believe the ability to tell and develop relevant stories are critical for individuals and for brands. And so I'm excited to just have a dialogue with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And something, when I was reading your bio and I was reading about you, and it says that you are a storyteller. And tell me, what is a storyteller? And I see so many people talking about that today. My daughter just did her bio, and in her bio, she said she was a storyteller. Tell me about that term and what it means.
So I believe that every marketer, that every brand builder has to be intrigued and curious about the story, the characters, the product, the journey, the beginning and the end. So That for me is the passion in my belly when I think about building a brand, relaunching a brand, or extending a brand. It is always about that central character, who is the consumer. And storytelling is how I connect my product or my service to what matters to you, the consumer.
Yeah, I mean, but it sounds like it comes from somewhere. It comes from the, you mentioned from the belly, but it's internal. It's the passion. It's the joy, and you have to be able to communicate that to folks. Comes from the heart.
It has to come from the heart. Certainly, as a historically Black college and university, what we share is the power and richness and beauty of storytelling. So much of our history was told and shared verbally. And I know when I used to sit at the knee of my grandparents, every question was answered with a story. There was never this texting generation of a one-word answer to a question. Every story, every question was answered with a story. And in my early years, I knew that I wanted to be a communicator. The power of storytelling and communicating, I felt, was a driver for every industry. And I didn't quite know what that meant at a very young age, but I will tell you, at this age, I was right. Every engagement, every connection, every relationship starts with dialogue. It is the intersection and exchange of experiences. And when you can find that connective tissue, that's where magic happens.
Ooh, I love that. I love that, where magic happens. We're always trying to make magic, and we're going to get into how do we make magic. Thank you for telling us that. I am in your bio. So I'm reading off all these amazing, what I consider to be five-star companies that you have worked with. You're currently at a wonderful healthcare system, Novant, Walt Disney, BET, Turner, McDonald's. You've had these kinds of experiences. Take me through very quickly your experiences at those companies. Let's start with Walt Disney, which I think is kind of that's a five-star company. Take me through Walt Disney experience.
Wow. So, and you said to do it very quickly. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. I mean, clearly, the Walt Disney Company is a global behemoth, a media conglomerate, from a retail, film, television, distribution, from young adults to seniors, from parks to products. And so huge, huge organization. And what brought me to the Walt Disney Company was I had spent the past 10 years or so in the entertainment world, driving what we called tune-in television, appointment viewing, marketing a show to get you to literally pick up your remote or now on your smartphone and change the channel to watch content. I made the decision to move to the Walt Disney Company as I observed consumer behavior shifting. Content consumption was no longer regulated by what time a show aired on a particular network. The consumer had control. We watch what we love when we have time to consume it. The show may air on Tuesday at 10, but I may not have time to watch it until Saturday at 8. And watching that change in content consumption, binging, streaming, I recognized that I needed to pivot to the long tail of content consumption. And that is what we call the post-premiere world. For many years, for decades, many decades, the television and film industry lived in the premiere bubble. A film would go to the theater, it would be in the theater 4 to 6 weeks, and then it disappeared. A television show would air its full season every week on a particular night of the week at a particular time, and then you were done. Smartly, the industry started to think about the distribution model, and there were so many consumers who were missed in that model. So the monetization shifted to the consumer has control. They want to consume the content when they are ready. That gave birth to Netflix streaming, Amazon, Hulu, and now every network has a streaming platform because the consumer has control. And so the opportunity to move to Disney and be the head of marketing for our distribution business was for me an opportunity to gain skills in the world of direct marketing, leveraging full funnel tactics and strategies that drive conversion based on data, moving from mass marketing, one to many, to direct marketing, one to one, and leveraging data to understand what you purchased in the past, via what platform and on what channel. So now I know how to market to you based on your behavior, based on your taste, based on your pricing ceilings, which gives me an advantage to do smart, modern marketing through CRM strategies.
Right. And that's where the data analytics come in and be able to do it. So you're moving to Walt Disney from, now this experience that you're talking about now, you're at BET. Is that when you were?
When I left BET is when I went to the Walt Disney Company, yes.
Right. So, but when you were at BET, you were talking about the shift in terms of folks' appetite for viewing and how they watch television and it has changed drastically when you first got into the business.
Absolutely.
When did you see this coming?
Well, the thing that I try to do as a marketer is never forget that you are a consumer. I always tell young people who are interested in marketing, to a large degree, you have to be a sociologist. You have to be so curious that you notice the subtle shifts. And so what I started to recognize about my own viewing habits is that my favorite shows, I wanted to create mind space to watch them and enjoy them. And it no longer works for me in my lifestyle to rush home or stop working to watch a half hour comedy or a 1 hour sitcom. I needed to create a space where I could be fully present for the content that I seeked, that I sought. And so that was the first thought. And then we started to recognize that the measurement system in cable television and broadcast was changing, Nielsen being the measurement house for television and multi-platform consumption, went from live measurement, who watched live when the show first aired. It started shifting to live same day. Did they watch it that night? Live plus one, live plus three, live plus seven. And even at CBS, they were really radical at the time and they were pushing for a live plus 21. What that signaled for me is a shift in the monetization opportunity and that we needed to really evaluate what our measuring stick was to go where the putt is going, not where it's been.
Right. And so that transformation has been incredible, but it has impacted not only the marketing and how you cater to the audience, but what you do in and around that. I mean, the entire system. For example, and I'm going to date myself on this one, but one of the most popular shows of all time was Dallas, right? And so when Dallas came on, the entire world stopped. I mean, you didn't have any events, you didn't go anywhere, you didn't do anything because it was shown and you had to see it at that time. But what you're talking about is that viewership shifted from that into now I'm in control. I can decide, and some of that has to do with technology, of course.
Yes, absolutely.
Space, right?
Absolutely. So it was Dallas for you, and I certainly remember Dallas, but for me, it was The Cosby Show in a Different World. Everything revolved around making sure I was home in front of the television to catch that episode. And so now Netflix just relaunched Girlfriends, one of the most amazing shows, I think, that reflected African-American women early in their career, post-college, that friendship, that camaraderie. And I watched it when it was live, right? But I am now re-experiencing it through a distribution model that didn't exist when it first aired. So if you think about it, all the costs are sunk. All the actors have been paid, all the production costs, all the legal fees, everything. So now you have this asset that is practically unencumbered that now you can remarket and generate millions and millions of dollars. The power of that is it's very common for people to say content is king, right? We've all heard it. We all believe it. But if content is king, distribution is queen.
Wow. I mean, that's really powerful. And it's a different way of thinking. Now, you talked about monetizing that. Who is monetizing that?
Well, in this case, Netflix is monetizing an asset that was essentially in the vault on the shelf. They have acquired that asset. They are now building and generating subscription dollars because it's reaching an audience that's interested. This is why every cable network out there has said, hold up, wait a minute, hold up. I need a streaming platform so that I don't have to sell my content to someone else who can monetize that long tail. I need to monetize it myself. The entire revenue model for broadcast and cable television has completely changed and will continue to change, right? When you think about the choices for entertainment content consumption today, they are endless, right? You name it, Quibi and new ones emerging every day. You know, I think the power of this is when you think about YouTube, a vast content library, but difficult to navigate to find the specific content you want. So take the model of YouTube, which has been incredibly successful, even with arguably a flawed UX, right? User experience. And now marry that or compare that to a Hulu or an Amazon or a Netflix, where content is categorized in a way that you can find what you want when you want it. Now, they may not have what you want, but you certainly know how to navigate to get what you want. This is what I mean about distribution and the ability to easily access the content you want when you want it. And that represents eyeballs that can be monetized over and over again.
Yeah, but it seems like there's so many services out there, so many systems out there, Vicky. How is it that they continue to multiply, and how do you get into this business? It seems to be crowded.
It is crowded, but it's really not new that it's crowded. The consumer has control, and I think it goes back to storytelling, right? I remember, when I was at TNT, one of the reasons TNT was so successful at the time and remains successful in the cable television market is because you knew what you were going to get when you went to the channel. Mm-hmm. When I was there, our brand tagline was, "We know drama." There was a content and programming formula similar to what Law & Order does exceptionally well that drove the kind of content you can expect when you go to TNT. So for the platforms who have a definitive identity for what you can expect when you go there, right? Netflix is known for having original content and the sort of the highest rated acquisition content, content that is aired somewhere else and now airs on their platform. And so they're delivering new, brand new original content paired with high performing acquired content. And that creates a catalog of content, a rich catalog of content that consumers will seek out. It's exactly what Amazon is doing. It's exactly what Hulu is doing. Quibi is next, and there's so many others. And about 5 years ago, the streaming channels, 5 to 6, changed the game. When you start to think about the award ceremonies, who was winning? Hmm. You know, it used to be HBO took home everything. Right. Then Netflix got in the game, and Hulu got in the game, and Amazon. And they have become known as sort of best in class providers of the hottest content available. So, and that landscape will continue to change. But what makes a platform successful is how they connect with viewers and drive an expectation for content that they consistently deliver on.
Yeah. Now, Vicky, that's a great approach to, you think about distribution and you think about streaming and getting into this business. The companies that do it well, what is the differentiator? I mean, what, like a Disney, for example, or a Netflix? I want to move us into the culture that leads to this creativity, this forward thinking. So if you think back and look at all of these amazing companies that you have worked at, what is it about those companies that keeps them where they are, on top and in the forefront?
Yeah. First of all, if I knew that, I probably would be on a boat sailing in the Mediterranean. So I can tell you what we probably are,
because you have the answer. I see it behind you over there.
I can tell you what I think some of the ingredients to that success is. The first is that the consumer is at the center of the business strategy. That's number one. There must be a rabid and almost violent commitment to understanding the insights around your consumer target. I always say that strategy should be powered by data and inspired by insights. Data tells us where we've been, what has happened. Insights tell us what's possible and where we're going. You must have the two. The second ingredient is that the strongest brands have alignment between their brand promise and their business strategy. There must be synergy. Our commitment to the consumer must be evident in our strategy to grow. And whenever they are not in alignment, there is disconnect and you will lose momentum. The third ingredient is that in business, change is a constant. And so a leadership mindset that shifts from change as a journey with an end destination to change as flow. It is part of the air we breathe. Nothing is ever finite or finished. We have to constantly be in motion to excel, to refine, to pivot, so that we can, again, be in direction of where the puck is going as opposed to where it's been. I heard something today that I was really compelled by, and I probably won't say it right, but it said that leaders who seek transformation, which is a really buzzword right now, you know, in any industry, transformation, whether it's digital transformation, cultural transformation, diversity, equity, and inclusion transformation, you name it, transformation. And what this conversation, it's a podcast I was listening to, said was leaders who seek transformation must first be transformed by the goal of the transformation. I had to think about it. I was like, well, what do you mean? And the point is, it, as a leader, if you have crafted a vision for what the future state looks like, the values, the principles, the strategies, you too have to be transformed in your thinking, your hiring practices, your leadership skills to advance that transformation. I thought it was powerful.
Right.
Because we think of transformation often as external to us as leaders. But to architect transformation, you as the leader have to be transformed.
Yeah, but one of the things that you talked about, which was amazing to me, is being in this space, and it is a current, you have to be in the moment, but you also have to be in the flow, and you have to stay there, but it is also not, almost not having an end, but understanding that you, people always talk about the journey. It is like being in that journey space, and Vicky, that's not an easy space for folks to be in.
It's not. It is so not. And, you know, I want to take a personal moment and share with you that as a leader, and I'll just say as a woman of color and as a Black woman, that change, that constant motion and evolution can be disconcerting. I recall early in my career, it was when I became a vice president of marketing, leaving McDonald's, moving to Turner. I'll try to tell the story quickly. And it was my first vice president role. It was a new industry and a new culture. I brought to Turner everything, every skill, every process that was successful for me at McDonald's to Turner. And in 6 months, the president of the division who hired me called me to his office and said, in 6 months, you will either be fired or promoted. I was devastated. I moved from Chicago to Atlanta, changed industries. And I said, you got to give me more. What do you mean? And he said, listen, we're entertainment. We're much more casual. At Turner, I had an office with a door that closed. At McDonald's, we had an open office concept with no door. Because there was an open office physical construct, there was a lot more formality around meeting cadence. You never just walked into someone's cubicle. In fact, the absence of a door actually put a door up. All engagement was driven by formal engagement. An email, hey, I'd like to get 30 minutes with you. And it was scheduled on a calendar. The optics of an open office concept actually created a very formal culture. Very business-oriented attire. I moved to a different organization, a different industry, where people wore gym shoes and blue jeans and sweatpants to work. I wore the wardrobe I wore that had made me successful at McDonald's. I share this with you to say that sometimes as a leader, you have to realize what brought you here won't take you there. Mm-hmm. And so this particular coach said, here's what I need you to do. Number one, stop being so formal in your engagement. People know you have credentials, but they want to get to know you. I need you to walk the halls and pop into people's offices and go to lunch. Get to know them in a more casual, less agenda-driven way. And this was the kicker. This was the one that blew me away. He says, you're going to pretend the next 30 days, you're going to pretend you have car trouble. Your car is in the shop because I know where you bought a home. And first of all, he asked me, who else did I tell at the organization that I was buying a home? And I said, no one, just you. Why would I tell someone my personal business? And he said, because people want to know you're going to stay. You moved here from Chicago. Letting people know you're buying a home means you're making an investment. And so he said, in the next 30 days, you're going to pretend that your car, you have car trouble, and you're going to call here's a list of people who I know live close to you. You need a ride to work and you need a ride home. That violated everything I had been taught as a little Black girl, which was keep your work life,
right,
your professional life separate. But what he signaled to me that Kellogg didn't signal, that my mentors and coaches to date had not signaled, is that leadership is about authentically connecting with people. And they have to get to know you outside of work. I did not have that insight, had not been raised to believe this. So I had to break some paradigms, personal paradigms, to find my comfort level, my lane, to build those genuine relationships. And I did it. I found my lane. I dropped some of the formality. I became aware of the culture and found where I would find my way to fit in and how I could retain who Vicky Free is. And in 6 months, I was promoted.
All right. Now, I mean, it's a great story because it actually speaks to your ability to go into a system and then change and then kind of incorporate it and also to do self-reflection, which is also very important for a leader as well. Constantly figuring out, you know, where I am, what I'm doing, why am I here, who's here with me, how do I integrate into those spaces? That's a great story, and I think a great lesson for a lot of folks. How did that impact your work, though? I mean, because part of it is now you're not getting into a space, you got promoted, but now you think about being authentic, and we talk about this a lot, being authentic in terms of our own leadership. Now, how did that impact your work?
You know, that is a great question because I do think we talk about, you know, authenticity and bringing your whole self to work, but it's easier to say and tougher to do. And the reason it's tough to do largely is because, you know, we talked about this flow. We're constantly growing and evolving in our leadership style and perspective. And so you've got to find the space where you can signal, I want to connect, but also be aware of what your personal boundaries are, what's acceptable, right? So you're growing. And for me, I have relationships with a couple of folks today because of some subtle changes, right? I could tell another story about that I made that first 6 months, I had never been hated so much. And it was because I'd come from a very formal environment, corporate environment. You start every meeting with an agenda. You end every meeting with here are our next steps and here's who accountable. You know, those were very rigorous protocols that did not work in an entertainment setting. And so I had to change to be successful practices and approaches, but I never changed the DNA of who I am as a human being and as a leader.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about personal branding. We live in an interesting age. We live in an age of social media, and we talked about all the different platforms and streaming and all the things that are happening out there. If you interview like Gen Zers or millennials, I mean, they all say they're going to own their own business and they're going to develop their own products and they're going to do their own personal branding. So talk a little bit about the world and how it has become this individual folks trying to find their voice. So, and it's kind of strange if you think about it, if all, you know, 350 million people found their voice, what would that look like? But we are in that age. So talk a little bit about personal branding.
Wow, I could talk to you for hours about personal branding. I think every human being has a brand. You can build it or you can kill it with every action you take. This is not just something for marketers or for content makers. Every human being has a brand. My grandmother and grandfather had a brand in the church that I grew up in, right? They didn't have a college degree. They never worked in corporate America, but their reputation was in the room before they entered. And that's really what a personal brand is about. It is what people say about you when you are not present. It is what are the top three things people will say about you. And I always say it is something you have to invest in. Like, what do you want people to say? And, you know, some of the principles of communication is tell them what you want to tell them, and tell them again. That's the same with branding. You have to reinforce and demonstrate and model what you want people to believe about you. And branding is the composite of not only what you do, but how you do it and how you make other people feel as you do it. It is a multi-sensory effort, and you have to consciously be aware of, is what I'm doing right now advancing my personal brand or detracting from it? And having that level of consciousness and awareness is what helps you refine and define your personal brand. Behaviors, values, principles, and outcomes.
Yeah. Now, Vicky, that's superimposed on this. We all have our personal brand to issues around values. You know, what do you value? Issues around, as I think about the question that I'm asking you, issues around social justice. You have these own personal kind of thoughts and ideas and beliefs that are important to you. But understand, you say you got to pay attention to yourself and to your branding. How does that work into this equation, if at all? And I'm sure that it does. And the classic example, Vicky, is Colin Kaepernick, right? And so that's a value, right? So, but he's been able to use that. He's been able to monetize it, and at the same time raise consciousness. Speak to that just a little bit.
Wow. Again, you first of all, you have some great questions, Dr. Robinson. Okay, so I believe that the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. Who you are in one moment is who you are in all moments. So what I mean by that is, no matter what your title is, what your job is, the company you work for, the human being that you are cannot be separated from the brand you're trying to project. And so that intersection has to align. And so by definition, as a human, we care about all aspects of our life. And we have to define for ourselves what our accountability is to advance our own personal mission. And so you mentioned Colin Kaepernick. There are many others. I think he is really the epitome of someone who put everything on the line for what he stands for. Everything.
Right.
He had never had a real history of social activism, certainly not on that level, but he believed so strongly in his convictions. And he was so touched and moved that he put everything on the line. Not everybody is or can be a Colin Kaepernick, but we all can find our lane to stand up for what is wrong, to speak against what is wrong, and to speak for what is right. And so, you know, I often challenge myself in the little bit of power and influence that I have to always be aware of how, if my not speaking up is actually louder oftentimes than speaking. So what do I mean by that? How do I make sure that I am listening for some misrepresentations about groups of people and challenging that? And how do I make sure that when there is a young, particularly a young person of color, their name comes up in the room, how do I make sure that I am speaking up in an authentic way that advocates for them? You know, very few people that look like me still today and you, right, are at the table where decisions are made. And I had a mentor tell me once that nothing is more powerful than when a leader asks a person of color, tell me about so-and-so, another person of color, and they have nothing to say. That speaks louder than if you say something negative. And so I try to always work to be in a position to advocate for people who are not in the room. And so in many ways, that is social activism. We all have to find our lane. And I can't miss this moment for anyone who's listening or watching. We are less than 30 days out from a critical election. Voting is leveraging your power for social justice. Voting every election is critical. And so if you haven't found your lane for your effort around social justice and equity, here's an opportunity. Make sure you get your vote in, get your ballot in, and make sure at least 10 other people you know do the same. So sorry for the PSA, but I couldn't miss that moment.
Not a problem. Not a problem. I mean, because that is really, you talk about being genuine, your authentic self. So much of yourself is also your history. And you cannot forget your history and where you are. You know, my wife and I, we want to make sure we vote, you know, at every election, because it's important, because people who came before us really gave us this opportunity. And I dare not disrespect their legacy and their history.
Yes.
So, no, thank you for that. I appreciate that. A quick segment in terms of where we are in higher education. You know that Winston-Salem State University is a historically Black college and university. You also know that, you know, these universities have gone through sometimes challenging times in terms of trying to present themselves and market themselves. Before the show began, you and I had a quick conversation, and I was telling you that it seems for first time in a long time, HBCUs are in vogue. People are paying attention to us. And I think it's because of what's happening in this country. A lot of things we have seen with racial and social unrest in this country have shone a light, or shined a light, I think, on people of color and African-Americans in general, which in turn has caused people to take a look at us. So in terms of that, and the reason why I was interested and wanted to have you on the show, because of the work that you've done with so many of these great companies and organizations, and I wanted to try to see, you know, what are the messages and what can we learn from these great companies and organizations, and then transfer that to HBCUs and how we might brand and market ourselves better?
Awesome question. I do believe that HBCUs, this is a moment in time. There is lightning in a bottle, and we would be remiss not to exploit this moment to not only protect the legacy, but to ensure the future of these schools. And I really believe it starts with the first question you asked me, which was about, what is your story? What is your story? Your product is the students that you are sending out into the world. So what is that story? Who are those central characters? And how do you illuminate what is special about Winston-Salem State University that no other college or university can replicate? What is that special sauce? You know, it is not obvious. It's going to take an excavation of talking, understanding the students, those who came, those who didn't, those who have graduated, those who didn't. What's unique and special that you can now exploit in a story that no one can look away from? Because you're trying to drive a share of heart, a share of mind, and a share of wallet. And it's in that order. If you can connect on all three of those variables, then what you have is loyalty. And loyalty unlocks all kinds of potential. And so I do believe it begins and ends with what is your unique story.
Yeah, look, I appreciate that. And we're constantly trying to tell the WSSU story. I believe that, you know, over the past few years, we've done a great job in doing that and getting people to pay attention to who we are. You know, what is our value? And I think I appreciate that. And that's good advice coming from you. I am, as we look to the future in terms of branding and marketing, what are the one or two things that people ought to be paying attention to you? Your work at Novant Health is some very interesting and powerful work. It sends a message to so many people. Tell us about that work that you do at Novant Health.
Sure, thank you. So I am honored to work in an industry and at a hospital system that is mission-driven. The sole mission of Novant Health is to deliver remarkable care to every patient in every dimension, every time. I remember when I was interviewing with Novant Health and had read this audacious goal, right? I said to the CEO, to achieve remarkable, that's better than great, right? That's better than excellent. It's such an audacious goal. It's like high jumping every minute of every day. Just think about that. The high jump, your body, everything has to be in motion just so at the right time to scale that bar. And I said, so are we clear on what it means for every team member, 30,000 team members strong, to deliver remarkable? And I truly believe asking that question, not having the answer, but asking the question is what landed me this opportunity. So you might ask, why would you leave a global media conglomerate, the Walt Disney Company, to come to a regional healthcare system? And the way I would answer that is I'm always guided by my personal passion and my personal mission. And I was really intrigued with the opportunity to come to an organization where I believe there is no better story to tell than the story of healthcare journey. Every human being will have an experience with a healthcare system. So how do we illuminate that experience and architect a journey that is differentiating and is remarkable? And if we don't achieve remarkable, the mere fact to aim for means that we will land close. And that was really exciting to me.
Yeah, I mean, that is exciting. And that we're glad that you are at Novant Health. We really are. And if you think about the whole term remarkable, and it is really trying to do something better than great. I love that analogy kind of going forward. A little bit in terms of specifics, in terms of the work that you do in terms of D&I.
So the work that I do is about leading, developing, refining the brand and our stories. Our products are our services, our front door services, our tertiary care institutes. And a big part of what we do is to engage, to educate, engage, excite, and activate our team members. You know, and you will know this as well as I do, that 20 years ago, when someone would take a marketing course, they talk about the four P's, right? Product, positioning, pricing, and promotion. Made sense. Well, today, you still have four P's, but they're very, very different, right? And there are probably more than four, but I would say it's about people, it's about processes, it's about purpose, and passions. Moving from such a product-centric focus to a consumer-centric focus. What connects with the consumer? Needs, likes, wants, desires, fears, motivations, right? That's, you have to find the connection of your product to that human spirit And that's what really keeps you out of commoditization. That's where your special sauce lives when you can figure that out. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the work in the world of COVID that we've been working on is a lot of consumer research around how consumers feel about seeking care. And we learned early on in the COVID pandemic that people were afraid to seek care. And we are in the heart attack, stroke, diabetes, Bible Belt, let's face it. And so if people don't seek care, they present later in their crisis, their health crisis. And so there's risk of them not surviving. So we needed to quickly aggregate data so that we can reach out to folks and let them know it's safe to seek the care that you need. Details on our cleaning protocol. We launched a quality and safety shield that made our commitment known on how we will protect consumers. We switched to no waiting room. We quickly ramped up our virtual care delivery. And as we started to migrate back to this new normal, we launched a campaign called Back to Life, leveraging a wonderful feel-good song.
Oh, that was a great commercial.
Back to Life.
I love that commercial.
Thank you. But it tapped into this insight that people were ready to get back to life, some degree of normalcy. And we're going to show you how to get back to the care you need. So that connective tissue to the insight and the outcome of the products that we offer.
Yeah, fantastic. We're almost out of time, but I want you to comment on something that I see that is happening is in COVID last 9 months, we've kind of been in hibernation, but we've been working and doing a lot of great things. I tell my team, we've been doing the impossible. So now they know that they can do the impossible. So now we're free to do something. Give me your take on if you think we are as a country, we are as an organization, ready for big ideas. You talked about remarkable being something that you have to do a lot. And it seems to me that this country is ready for big ideas and people want to put resources, they want to put their money and their time into big ideas.
Love ending on that note, because I actually believe we are ready. I think this country is ready. And he or she who is not ready better get ready. What I love about Gen Z, they are makers and doers. You mentioned earlier about this entrepreneurship. I think there is actually a merger of what I call corporatepreneurship, constantly reinventing yourself, even in the context of a corporation, driving a range of experiences so that you can actually either launch your own business or create a dynamic career. And to go back to, you mentioned Colin Kaepernick, and you think about what Nike did.
Yes.
Talk about big, right? When no other team would touch him, when no other brand would touch him, that partnership signaled to the world what Nike's manifesto is about their consumer. And so big ideas are waiting. Every day there's a new platform launching. Content is being built and created on smartphones, in garages, by three-year-olds. So if you're not ready, you better get ready. And I also think that empowerment, there is a shift happening to, I call it empowerment at the edge. And what I mean by that is companies are recognizing that great ideas can come from anywhere. It doesn't have to come from the top down. We must create channels where the people closest to the customer have a voice on where the business and the brand is going, because they have brilliant ideas. This hierarchy of titles and command and control doesn't work anymore. We have to have ideas, an ecosystem of ideas, and a rigorous process to vet them, leveraging data and analytics, insights and opportunity to drive us forward. So yes, we are ready. I think the world is ready. I definitely think as a country, it's now or never. I think this moment is that big.
Yeah. And it's capitalizing on all the human capital. It's not leaving anyone out.
And what absolutely I'm
is opening up the entire world, no matter where you came from. You can come from rural North Carolina to some big city to some international venue. The world is open for those ideas. And for me, it's about giving folks in those spaces opportunities to I'll give you a quick peek at my new strategic plan. It's called Unleashing the Genius.
Ooh, I like it.
You know, no matter where you are, we're going to unleash that genius, and it's going to come out in ways that you and I have been talking about tonight. You have been a great, great guest, Vicky Free. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You have inspired me too. I love unleashing the genius. There's a story there. There are many stories there.
Yes.
My brain is spinning right now with that. So love that framework. And it really will be the story that will differentiate and separate Winston-Salem State University under your leadership. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow. What a show. Join us next week, everybody. Great, great show for another edition of Future Focus Now. Good night, everybody.